Give me a beat. Thank you for pushing play. You are listening to the Rary is Fundamental Podcast, episode 31. And the Rockets! Right there! No one really cares about the guy on the bottom. No one really cares about the guy beneath. What's up, Internet? This is the Rary is Fundamental Podcast, episode 31, recorded on September the 10th, 2015, brought to you by Rary.net and the Happy Hour Network. I am Rary, your sexy party host. If you never listen to this podcast is about whatever the heck I feel like talking about. Most of you guys know me as an NBA online writer, but I also dabble in other things like wrestling, pop music, video games, anime, other sports. Sometimes I'll talk to the Gal Pal Squad about fashion and dating, and sometimes I'll talk to my buddy EJ Christian about old school stuff from the 80s and 90s. I bring on friends and personalities, mostly sports personalities, and we talk about whatever we want. That's how it goes as we keep it fundamental on this show. In this episode, we have Adam Reisinger of ESPN back as we talk about pro athletes dabbling in music. I know you heard some of these athletes try their hand at rapping and singing, and man, is it painful. Or hilarious, or both. Also, the NFL season is starting, and you can definitely tell how excited we were talking about it on the beginning of this show. I'm not going to delay this any further, so let's get right to it. It's me and a couple of Adams, Jacoby and Reisinger. Sounds like a law firm. Scratch! Rary is Fundamental, episode 31. This is Rary, and joining me, my sometimes co-host, Adam Jacoby. How's it going?
Hey, how you doing, Rary?
Good. And our guest... it's his third time on the podcast. It's another Adam from ESPN, Adam Reisinger. How's it going?
Going well.
Awesome. So this is going to be confusing because there are two Adams on this podcast. This has never happened to me before. So
you know what that means. If it's two Adams, it's actually a molecule of fun.
Oh, I knew that was coming.
Yeah. Yep, exactly. So today is Thursday, September the 10th, 2015, and in a few hours... the NFL season is officially starting, and I'm not too excited about it. Last year was probably the least football I've watched in the 20-plus years. Adam Jacoby, are you excited at all?
I mean, it was the same way for me. Last year, I barely watched any of it, and what I did watch, it was because other people in my family were watching. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got their teams. I don't. And mm-hmm. I didn't want to... cover it or even tweet about it or in other, you know, in any way add to the attention that gets given to it, you know, on a pretty involuntary basis. You know, there are so many people saying, well, yeah, you might be mad at the NFL, but you won't stop watching. Man, yes, mm-hmm. I will. Yeah, I did that, actually. So, you know, so I didn't have the Super Bowl on. I kept on.
Wow.
Yeah, no, because so what, you know? You know, this year, I guess I'll tweet about it, because the stuff that I was most upset about, you know, they've made changes on that front. They actually are enforcing some pretty toothsome penalties for violence against women. Mm-hmm. And the NFL writers grouse about it. I still think Goodell is a stooge and absolutely has to go, but you know, I don't see that happening in the next 6-8 years. Mm-hmm. And what he does is pass, you know, reforms incremental as they may be, then at some point I'm waiting for something, you know, it's like sort of waiting for a dog to come driving down the highway. Like, if you're spending time waiting for something like that, it's sort of on you. So, mm-hmm. You know, maybe I'll tweet about it, but I'm not carving out large portions of my Sundays for this anymore. I think that's pretty much gone, because I didn't really miss it. I didn't.
Adam Reisinger, are you excited?
I wish I could say yes, because there was a time in my life when I was a massive football fan. And even last year, you know, last year I had to watch a ton of football for work with what I was doing.
Right.
But this year I've coordinated my schedule, so I'm off from work on Thursday nights, Sundays, and Mondays. So there will be occasions where I have to watch the NFL, but not as frequently. And I'd love to say that I'm taking some kind of moral stand against the NFL, like the violence against women that Adam referred to, and even like the head trauma. Like it's all of that's so depressing, but none of that was what got me to care less about football. I grew up as a huge Washington fan and loved that franchise, and I can't take it anymore. Like, Dan Snyder has completely destroyed my love for this sport. I'm not going to sit through a season of Kirk Cousins throwing 3 interceptions a game and leading the team to an 0-16 record, which inevitably leads to them drafting Cardale Jones and ruining his beautiful potential. And I just can't do it. I can't watch that happen. So, you know, I've got like 200 unwatched movies in my iTunes library and 17 Sundays to work through those.
What's really funny is that it looks like the Niners are going through that exact same thing with Jed York.
Oh, and it's so sad because in the 80s, the Niners and Washington were model franchises.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And now they're just like, what are you guys doing?
Mm-hmm. Right. Now they seem to have taken a very cynical approach to that status that they enjoyed. They're like, well, now that we've built up these very large fan bases based off of these great decades that we've had, screw all y'all. We are going to maximize the money coming out of your pockets, and we don't give a damn what we look like on the field.
Yep.
No, it's very crass business sense, but it in the owner's sense, you know, what do they have to care? As long as those tickets still getting bought, then whatever, you know, the wins and losses are pretty much incidental at that point.
The 49ers one looks even more cynical because it happened literally 1 year after they got their new stadium. Like, yeah, well, we got this great new stadium. Thanks for building that for us. We don't care anymore.
Right. Mission accomplished.
That's
it.
God, it's so depressing. I'm a Niners fan, so I'm just here just taking it all right now.
So sorry.
It's okay. But two, three years ago, they were in the Super Bowl.
Isn't it just like Kaepernick and 52 guys they pulled off the street?
Yeah, everybody retired because of various reasons, or some are getting arrested and stuff like that.
Right. Getting, like, super arrested. Like, we're not talking about outstanding parking tickets.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, geez. Like, this is the least football I watched in 20-plus years. Part of it was the move to Oregon, and my landlord didn't have cable, and they were having a hard time in local channels. But that's besides the point. I could have gone to a bar and watched it, but I didn't go on my way. Yeah, because, all this Goodell stuff, the Deflategate stuff, the violence towards women, like, everything. It's just turned me off at the NFL. Mm-hmm. And I'm probably not going to watch tonight, even though it's a season opener. And usually I look forward to it.
Yeah, I don't think I will either.
Yeah, all I hear is the Deflategate stuff, Goodell being a moron about trying, and, oh, God, it's just...
Mm-hmm. I will say that one of the crazy things about trying to not watch the NFL is that you're essentially excluding yourself from Twitter on Sundays.
Yeah.
Right.
That was the weirdest part of it. Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's going to be hard for, like, because as Adam and Lana mentioned on the last podcast, it's too hard for the NFL to go away. There's too many fans. Mm-hmm. There's too many people that like the sport. So it's going to be really tough. Not that I want the NFL to go away. I just want them to get it correct.
Yeah, that's exactly. All. Yeah, I don't want there to be no NFL. I really want to be an NFL fan. Because it's professional football, and I like football and professionals, I guess. but this iteration of it is very concerning on a moral level, and it is how am I going to put it? It seems like the NFL doesn't really care that it's concerning. That, you know, as long as they keep cashing those checks. Whatever.
Which is the important thing for them. Yeah, right. Exactly. Cashing those checks, getting all that money for merchandise. People are watching the game. It's not going to matter to them.
Yeah.
No. So, yeah. All right. So We're going to go away from the depressing topic of the NFL. Hope you guys enjoy your game. But Adam Reisinger has been on the podcast the last two times talking about music. First, Britney Spears, and then Pitch Perfect. But today we're going to do a little crossover here. We're going to talk about professional athletes doing music. And I'm not really sure if we've really seen a good crossover just yet. So let's go.
We have. We have. I got one.
Okay.
Go for it.
Go for it.
It's a little outside the mainstream, but Wayman Tisdale was actually really good.
Good. Rest in peace, Wayman Tisdale. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you were a outstanding jazz. What is it? He played a saxophone, right?
Yep. He was excellent.
Yeah, he was really good at it. I remember hearing a few of his pieces. It was really good. I enjoyed it.
Didn't he spend some time with the Marsalises for a little bit? Or am I making that up?
He might have. I mean, he recorded like half a dozen jazz albums. He was mm-hmm. a bass player, actually. And one of them charted on Billboard on the jazz chart.
That's right.
Yeah. Nice.
But, like, he was good. The problem mm-hmm. is when you get let's just be honest here. When basketball players try to rap, things can go very, very wrong.
So let's go over that really quick. Allen Iverson mm-hmm. did such a thing.
Allen Iverson went wrong from the perspective of, holy crap, no one was ready for that level of language and misogyny from an NBA player. But 40 bucks is actually pretty good.
Right.
Hits you hard.
There is that. And then there is also the fact that he was trying to rap under a pseudonym. Like, what was it? It wasn't even like
Jules.
Answer.
What was it? Jules with a Z.
Right, yeah. Which sort of like seems counterproductive. Like, I mean, yeah, everybody knew it was Alan. They didn't try to hide it or anything. But just like, you know, you get into it because you've got that name recognition.
Right.
And then to be like, yeah, no, don't call me that. It sort of reminds me of Arrested Development when they try to make the show with, you know, the courtroom show with Judge Reinhold, and it ends up being called Moot Court with Jay Reinhold.
Yes.
Like, you're sort of defeating the purpose by giving yourself this name. What? Isn't that the whole point?
I think he really – there's probably some part of Allen Iverson that thought, you know, if I release this as Jules, maybe David Stern won't catch on that it's me. And David Stern was like, no, Allen, I know it's you.
I've seen the ads. I have eyes.
Yeah. You're going to need to dead this ASAP.
But yes.
He did a song with Mace, and it was actually solid.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then, you know, it was just way too hard for everybody.
Oh, yeah. That was 40 Bars was the one that it was like, because people were used to Shaq. And, like, Shaq was, you know, he was lighthearted and, you know, he's rapping about, do you want me to shoot it? Like,
yeah, no. Yeah, yeah.
It was, and then Allen Iverson comes in sounding like, you know, late 80s NWA. And the NBA already had problems with him with the cornrows and the oversized throwbacks. It was just—it was the last straw for David Stern.
What David Stern was talking about, the whole concerns about attitude, he didn't make those up. That I, some of my older family members, you know, were always talking about, I don't know about the NBA these days. A lot of me first athletes, like they didn't even know about the rap album. They're just, you know, I'm not so sure about these tattoos. And the me first attitude, you know, it's code that you don't have to work really hard to read between. No, because we were just coming off of Michael, you know, corporate champion Jordan, and John Stockton in his, you know, tidy shorts, and, you know, even Karl Malone was pretty inoffensive. And then just out of nowhere, Allen Iverson and... People who were born in the 30s were unprepared for that.
I mean, I'm looking at these lyrics here for 40 Bars. Let me read some of this to you, and this is probably the cleanest part that I can read, and there's still profanity in it.
Oh, boy.
The second verse starts, everybody stay fly, get money, kill and f*** bitches. I'm hitting anything in plain view for my riches. Like, holy crap, no. Like, again, if I heard that from, like, Kendrick Lamar, totally fine. The NBA offices hearing that from Allen Iverson, who was on the cover of Slam Magazine every other month, like, they were like, no!
No, wait, just talk about shooting the basketball. You're good at that! Shoot the basket! No, no, why, bitches? No!
Yeah, but here's the thing, like, the NBA is not all against rap, after all.
No, it's very into rap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Here's the thing.
A certain kind of rap.
Yes. They released, I'm not sure if it was actually, you know, by the NBA, but there was an album called NBA's Best Kept, B-Ball's Best Kept Secret. Volume 1 has various players, you know, doing their thing on the mic. Cedric Ceballos, Brian Shaw, Gary Payton, J.R. Ryder, Jason Kidd, Shaq, of course.
I'm sort of curious what J.R. Ryder sounds like on the mic. Like, that's the one guy where I'm like, oh, he might have something to say.
I'm sure. You can YouTube it right now. B-Ball's Best Kept Secret. I forget what songs, but here's the thing. L.A. stations play Cedric Ceballos' song pretty regularly.
It had Warren G. It was Cedric Ceballos.
It had Warren G. Exactly.
Oh my God! Really?
It had Warren G. And it's not half bad. You just aside from Ceballos, but I got to tell you a story. And I told this to Reisinger off the record. But the Bellflower High School, which is the high school I went to, we were supposed to have the Lakers in our assembly, right? You know, Nick Van Exel, Kobe Bryant. Mm-hmm. Eddie Jones, all those guys, right? All we got was Cedric Ceballos, and then he performed a 30-minute concert right after.
I don't see a problem here.
Yeah. But that's what happened. We were accepting basketball players who got a rap concert instead. And there was just, like, so much scattered noise. Like, they didn't care because all they wanted to see was Nick Van Exel, Eddie Jones, Kobe Bryant, all those guys. And then, of course, what's funny is that a week later, Ceballos gets traded for Robert Horry. So, I don't know if that was coincidence or anything like that, but, yeah, that was just really weird at the time. But, yeah, look up J.R. Ryder on YouTube, B-Ball's Best Kept Secret. I don't know what the title is, obviously.
The title of J.R. Ryder's song, just amazingly, is Funk in the Trunk. That's really all you need to know.
Yeah.
I've listened to this album, B-Ball's Best Kept Secret. They should have
heard it too. It was a volume 1. There was no volume 2 though, which
now that's what I call NBA rapping.
Yeah. Which in my mood depends on whether it's good news or not.
By the way, multiple people on this album are now NBA head coaches, and I hope that their players give them crap for their songs every day. Like if I was on the Bucks, I would walk into the locker room every day blasting What the Kid Did by Jason Kidd.
Oh, good grief. Seriously, we should tweet Giannis or something. It's like, hey, guess what? Your coach used to rap.
Just making sure you're aware of this. Because
yes.
Well, okay, if you got the webpage for that pulled up, what was the release date of that album?
November 15th, 1994.
I turned 16 years old on that day, by the way.
Giannis might not have been alive.
Yeah, but so what? I'm just saying, like...
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, this is probably news to him.
Right.
Because I couldn't tell you who, you know, what athletes were making music in 1980.
He was born on December 6th, 1994. So he was born 3 weeks after that album came out. Yeah, we need to get on this. There are two things we need to do here. We need to get Giannis to listen to What the Kid Did and talk to Jason Kidd about it.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is we need to talk to our buddy Kristen Ledlow from Turner and NBA TV, because Dennis Scott had a song on this album called All Night Party.
Oh, and my God.
This has to happen.
Ledlow!
Yeah. Yeah.
She needs to start giving him about All Night Party.
Every single episode.
Yeah.
Yes. Game time or whatever.
It's Kristen Ledlow from NBA Inside Stuff, and I was once on the Ray Reyes Fundamental Podcast. Once. That was enough.
Former coach of the Nuggets, but Brian Shaw.
Collecting checks.
Yes, anything can happen. Shaq and Ilal Scratch. Oh my goodness! Wow.
Yeah, that's the one thing, and obviously we should talk about Shaq's rap career because he was the big one.
And yeah, he was the big one. What do you think in general? Because I thought he was hit or miss.
He had tracks that were solid. He never had a whole album that was good. His first his first album went like double platinum, I think. But it had so many just bad tracks on it. But everyone loves What's Up, Doc. Let's be honest. It's a 90s classic.
There
are some other tracks on there that are good. The one thing Shaq was able to do throughout his career because of who he is, to be honest, he was able to get some really good guest stars on his albums. Like, he did a song with Michael Jackson. He did a song with, he did a song with Biggie. You know, he did songs with Warren G. Like, The song he did with Biggie, by the way, is great. Like, Shaq's verses are only average, but Biggie kills it, and the beat is good. Like, it's on my iPhone in regular rotation. Like, it's good. but Shaq by himself as a rapper, like you said, he was hit and miss. Mm-hmm. There were times when you listened to him, you're like, yeah, this is pretty good, and there were times like, oh God, what is he doing?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. With Power 106 here in L.A. actually played a straight playing like on regular rotation, like all the time.
Yeah.
You're like, that's the day. So, Jacoby?
Well, I mean, whenever somebody is hit or miss like that, and they are novices, like Shaq was, I mean, you just chalk that up to inexperience. Like, that album today would just be a mixtape that people pass around. They're like, yeah, okay, three of these are fire. And let's see what he can do next. Now, it's fine that Shaq would instead spend most of his time and efforts on basketball. Probably the right move.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But if ever there's some 7'2", 320-pound dude who's got bars and doesn't have to spend his time dominating the NBA and working his way into the Hall of Fame and this and that, having those very unique physical characteristics and what they do to your voice box and also the personality that he cultivated and how that informs everything. He was a really unique sort of person in a lot of ways to get into the rap game. And so there was a lot of potential, and there's a reason why, people were playing those songs for years to come. There's not going to be somebody like him again. And as a music enthusiast, I'm a little bummed out that we didn't get a, full-time, full-effort shot at hip-hop from Shaq. As an everything else enthusiast, I feel like he made the right choices here.
Well, he does have the time now, but then again, he's like 40-something, so it kind of feels weird.
Yeah, there aren't many guys Shaq's age that drop that suddenly, after not having he hasn't released an album in, 15 years or so, that suddenly drop a fire album. Right. The one thing is he apparently abandoned. He had this like compilation Super Friends project that he was working on at one point. That the list of guest artists he had on it was ridiculous. He had Dre, he had Snoop, he had Luda, he had Black Rob, he had Mos Def,
oh, man.
He had Common. Mm-hmm. Like it probably would have been his best album because it would have been the most minimal contributions from him. but it never came
sign.
Out.
So Kobe did a rap too.
Yes, he did.
With Tyra Banks.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And he had a verse in a Brian McKnight song too.
He had a verse on a Brian McKnight song. He also did a verse on the remix of Say My Name for Destiny's Child.
Right.
No.
Yeah.
How do I not remember this?
Kobe and Beyonce did a collabo before Jay-Z and Beyonce did.
Aha. Uh-huh.
But Kobe's solo track, K-O-B-E, mm-hmm. with Tyra Banks doing the chorus, who was dating Chris Webber, by the way, who was on the Lakers' rival, which is just so messed up.
I'm sure that went over great.
It might be one of the worst rap songs ever released.
That's fair.
Like it was so bad that despite the fact that Sony could have slapped Kobe's name on anything and sold a million records, they were like, nope, and just canceled the entire album.
So we have things to do after this show. We're gonna listen to B-Ball's Best Kept Secret, and especially the J.R. Ryder's Funk in the Trunk.
Mm-hmm.
And we're gonna listen to Kobe's whatever rap career he had.
Yes.
Which was
that's our
very,
homework. Yeah.
Which is as long as this podcast, basically, our rap career. His rap career. So, other athletes that tried to do music, Deion Sanders, guys.
Oh yeah. His track on the Street Fighter soundtrack was certainly a song that existed.
Jeez. And, of course, his infamous Must Be the Money track.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That
wow.
Again, it happened. That was a thing.
He sure was pretty confident about his singing.
What honestly mm-hmm. what it was Dion was boys with Hammer. This was back when Hammer had a ton of money and had no idea what to do with his money. So he's like, Dion, why don't you record an album? I'll put it out.
No, sure.
I was awesome in the Too Legit to Quit video. I can make an album.
And I love that he was like, oh, yeah, professional athlete, why don't you make an album? No. Don't worry yourself with the financials, professional athlete who makes millions of dollars a year. I've got this.
I don't know what to do with my money, but, you know, here's what I'll do. I'll help you release an album.
Deion Sanders' album is basically the rich person's equivalent of Rebecca Black paying $2,000 to some fantasy studio to record Friday. Must Be the Money is the Friday of 1994.
That is the truest thing anybody has ever said with their mouth before.
Oh, man.
He was on SNL.
Yes,
like, yeah,
he performed on.
It had
to be the bad seasons of SNL.
It was basically his fault.
SNL.
Oh no. Mm-hmm.
Lorne Michaels credits this season as the closest he's ever been to being fired. So I'd like to believe that Deion Sanders performing a musical medley had a lot to do with that.
Lauren's in his office like, Prime!
And I mean, I'm saying this, Deion Sanders was my favorite athlete growing up. I loved that he played two sports. I loved that he had swag on the field. You know, I loved the high-stepping when he returned to the Georgia Dome. And I bought that album, and I was like, oh, God, this is bad. And, like, when you're 14 years old, if you like someone, you pretend everything they do is good.
Oh,
and
my God.
And I was like, no, this is bad.
Do you still have it?
Oh, probably not.
Ah.
I got rid of a ton of my CDs.
Because, yeah, like, if Ken Griffey Jr. had put out a rap album, I would have bought it the day before it came out.
Oh, yeah.
I would have kicked the postman's ass, like, on his way to Sam Goody, be like, this is mine.
And you would have pretended it was good for, like, the first 2 days.
Mm-hmm. I'd be like, yeah, well, he's certainly taken a new spin on this. It's what makes him him. That's Griffey all the way. And then I'd be like, this is trash. Oh, no. So I'm glad he didn't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, imagine if the Bash Brothers released an album.
Yeah, how did Jose Canseco not have an album?
I would have bought it the first day myself because I was a big Bash Brothers fan growing up.
I mean, that's sort of the upset out of all of this, that Jose Canseco never cashed in on that.
Actually, if he released a new album right now, I would buy it right now.
Oh, in a heartbeat.
Exactly.
So,
dude, I mean,
Joey Nine Fingers.
While Mark McGwire never released an album, and neither did Jose Canseco, there was an album released in the 2000s, 2005 to be specific, called Oh Say Can You Sing, Music Recordings by Major League Baseball Players.
Oh, no.
I have not heard of this one.
It's so bad. Most of them are covers. Like, Ozzy.
Well, that's a great start.
Stupid. Omar Vizquel covers the Goo Goo Dolls Broadway.
I have to hear that, because I hate the Goo Goo Dolls.
More homework! More homework!
Original track.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. Seriously, I highly recommend tracking it down if you like enjoying, ironically, horrible things.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's our specialty.
Yeah.
you know where you are right now, right?
Yeah, exactly. I want to talk to you for a second. Yeah, Jimmy Rollins also has an original rap on there. It's pretty bad.
If I find a song out of this Oh Say Can You Sing album, I am putting the track to the podcast.
Yes.
I just like most of these guys were like mid 2000s like stars or at least names. I cannot believe that they got Ozzie Smith, Hall of Famer and legend, to face himself by doing a song on it.
Like, he was already in Cooperstown.
Yeah.
Oh man!
You
just
want to show
more talent. Oh man! Wow. I'm upset at myself that I didn't hear about this 10 years ago.
Right.
Seriously,
to be fair, it came out in that period of time between when, like, everyone was just stealing music and it actually became illegal and possible to download music on the internet. So it was in that weird period where no one bought music anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, like, let's be honest, even when you were stealing music, like, you would have been embarrassed to download this on Napster.
For some reason, nobody was, like, jumping on Kazaa and being like, give me Ozzie Smith. No, the music.
Yeah.
Yes, I know. And people are jumping on Audio Galaxy and LimeWire. Just
I miss Audio Galaxy so bad.
Oh, Audio Galaxy was so good.
I had it in the dorms. And so that was like getting music instantly, whatever you wanted. And it was always the actual like right tracks because of how it was set up. Oh man, I miss that.
Well, I mean, the ridiculous like internet of stealing music is how I have all of Allen Iverson's raps still in my iTunes library. You know, I have all of Kobe Bryant's songs.
Mm-hmm. See, you're in the right place. Yeah. Like we all like this stuff. You know, we all like ironically terrible stuff.
This is how sad I am. I have the a cappella version of K-O-B-E so that I could remix it with other tracks.
People think I'm sad.
But I'm telling you, track down his remix of Say My Name and just listen to that verse and be like, man, Beyonce really let this happen.
Oh man, so moving on. Oh wow, I don't know, I don't even know how to top that, but remember when NFL teams would actually do music themselves, the Super Bowl Shuffle?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of that one?
Oh, it was fire. Well, it was in that era of in the mid 80s, it was basically impossible to suck at rap.
Yeah,
because it was too.
Yeah. So it was just like, here's a beat, and it's the 37th beat ever made because it's still the 80s. So
yeah,
if we can't, there's no frame of reference to tell you what's what's hot and what's not. We're still not using fire as an adjective yet. We're 15 years away from that. So, this is literally just islands in the stream without the vocals looped. Go for it. They're like, oh, yeah, I can do this.
Here's a beat. Just talk over it.
Right. Do the words rhyme on any rudimentary level? Yes? Great. You are now great at rap. That is it.
This is
bar
how
was
new,
so low.
This is how new rap was in, like, the mid-80s. I mean, obviously, it wasn't new overall. Like, it existed in the Bronx and, you know, in other places, and it had been around for about 10, 15 years. But it had just really broken into the mainstream in the early 80s. Mm-hmm. Super Bowl Shuffle, despite being, let's be honest, it's bad. It's enjoyable, but it's bad. It was nominated for a Grammy.
No!
Grammy for, like, best song by a football team as a joke. It was nominated in the category of best R&B vocal performance duo or group, along with Kiss by Prince, which fortunately beat it out. Thank God.
Wow.
If Prince had lost to the Super Bowl Shuffle, his career might have been over there, and we would have been robbed of so much great music.
He might have, like, gotten into nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
And then Jim McMahon will release, like, 5 solo albums after that.
Right. Imagine what we would have unleashed. And J.R. Ryder would have been the least of our worries at that point.
As enjoyable as the Super Bowl Shuffle is, and, I mean, still to this day, like, even though the rhymes are beyond basic, and the beat sounds like the Casio demo, mm-hmm. like, it's still enjoyable to this day. Like, there's no feeling quite like, as we approach Super Bowl time, going back and watching the video or listening to the Super Bowl Shuffle. But it spawned this whole genre of teams doing bad music videos, the worst of which, if you've never seen it, is the Los Angeles Dodgers doing something called the Baseball Boogie.
Oh, no.
I feel like I've seen this once. But
yeah, it's beyond bad. First of all, they're in, like, their super mid-80s, ridiculous baseball uniforms, the polyester with the giant elastic waistbands.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, like it's so cheesy, and it's beyond bad. Like, and that's the negative legacy of Super Bowl Shuffle, is it made every team think they could do something like this. And the 1980s Los Angeles Dodgers were not a team that could do this.
You know what I really liked the best out of all the teams that did this rapping thing was the LA Rams doing a song called Ram It.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. The lyrics are the most underrated ever, because you can find like 4 or 5 innuendos in each verse.
I don't think that they knew what they were doing.
Have you ever been around professional athletes? I think they knew exactly what they were doing.
The 80s. There was a lot of cocaine going around. Mm-hmm. It's entirely possible they were just high the entire time.
Oh, I assume they were.
One of the verses was, I like to ram it, as you can see, nobody likes ramming it more than me.
Okay. That's on purpose.
They clearly knew what they were doing there.
Yes. One that you need to track down, and I grant you this is a little out of the mainstream. It's by an indoor soccer team called the San Diego Sockers, and it's Sokers, because I guess that means they sock things with their foot. I'm not going to try to unpack that one, but it's called One for the Thumb, and it took me a little while to figure out what they meant was they wanted their 5th championship ring, because then that one would go on the thumb. But that doesn't really get explained very well. And so it's literally just a bunch of indoor soccer players making their own little Super Bowl Shuffle, but it's about kicking the ball. And, oh, look at that, they've all got matching sunglasses. And they're in their indoor soccer uniforms. And it's like, oh, this is sort of the nadir of what the Bears spawned. So look it up.
Yes. Wow. There's been so much awesome music produced by pro athletes.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jacoby, I was just thumbing through wrestling websites, and for some reason I ran into your review of John Cena, professional wrestler.
Oh, yeah, he had a rap album.
He had a rap album, yes.
A whole album, all to himself.
Yes. I knew about this, but I didn't know that you actually reviewed one of their songs.
Yeah. No, they came to me and Pat, and they're like, hey, do you want to listen to some John Cena music? And inexplicably, we were like, yes, that's an idea. But yeah, and I was lucky enough to get one of the few of the, like, it was like a 15 track album. You know, you can get away with 8. And they were like, no, let's just keep packing these in here. And I got one of them that actually had a video to go with it.
Yeah, I remember watching it in one of those on one of the Raws, actually. They showed that video.
Oh, God, that's too bad. And it's like, one, you know that the production was done by one of his boys in Western Massachusetts, because when you think about the cradles of hip-hop, you think suburban Boston, and it's not very good, but it's supposed to be like one of those like sentimental summer jam type things,
yeah.
Done by somebody who's not good at this, and the video is it's like 80% John Cena running around his backyard, like hanging out with his boys and his family. Like sort of like one of those like home movie type things, you know, that sort of footage that, you know, was more prevalent in the 90s when everyone's like, oh my God, I've got a camcorder. But and what is striking is, one, his shirt is always off.
Well, he's a wrestler after all.
And two, he is always in some direct physical contact with somebody. Like there is no such thing as personal space and bubbles in the Cenaverse. I mean, he really just wants to be rubbing his unnaturally large pectorals all up in your business. And if you're like, hey, John, don't do that. You're sweaty and shirtless, and I don't want to be body slammed right now. I think that just wouldn't register with him. Like that's like telling the exact same thing word for word to a dog. They just sort of cock their head and then go do exactly what they were going to do before. And it was sort of endearing because you're like, oh, so this isn't just some sort of act by John Cena. He really wants to be seen by as many people as possible with his shirt off in direct physical contact with somebody all the time. It doesn't matter if there's a wrestling ring there or not. He just wants people to see him.
He just
him.
Wants to body slam you. Yeah.
Yeah, that's and so you're like, aw. Well, then wrestling is perfect for him. He's where he should be. I'm glad that he is not an assistant sales manager at Circuit City, because that would be a bad personality for that. But wrestling, and exclusively pro wrestling, is perfect.
It is Keith Boss Claus. You see, you're chilling with us on Ray Ray's Fundamental Podcast. When I was young, I never had a big wish list. A bed and bone is all I wanted for Christmas. In 78, the star was born. 2001, his career was on. Now, when I was young, I never had a big wish list. A bed and bone is all I wanted for Christmas. In 78, the star was born. 2001, his career was on. Now, end of the shoes of a true born winner. Taking it to the top with gyms and sports center. Dipped in octane, smooth as hard hooking. If nothing fat, then the glove's gonna get ya. Spinning in Fozzie like the past great Ozzy. Short stuff in the league, so bag up off me. And Stuart Scott was saying way too saucy. Since the days of young, they know who the boss be. One of the best in the game, from the ground to the fame. 6-4-3 is ending the game. And if you hot, I'm putting up flames. If you ask, Jay Rollins the name.
This is Lana Berry from The Lana Berry Show with Lana Berry, and you're listening to the Ray Ray is Fundamental Podcast, and Adam Jacoby is a terrible person.
Obviously, we have Clay Matthews and other Green Bay Packers players guest starring in Pitch Perfect 2. Mm-hmm. And when I saw the trailer, and I had heard some buzz that they were going to be in it. Like, I thought maybe they would be playing, like, an a cappella group. And it's in the riff-off scene, and they're literally just, it's like the Green Bay Packers. And the best part is that all the other a cappella groups are so confused as to why the Green Bay Packers have an a cappella group. Like the look on Becca's face, she's like, what? Why are... And then, of course, that's the scene that everyone saw in the trailer where they rip Clay Matthews' sleeves off, and, you know, Fat Amy goes, you know, I want to be in the middle of that sandwich or whatever the line is. But then they don't actually sing. At least I'm fairly certain that they didn't do the singing. But they do the talking intro to Bootylicious, the Destiny's Child song. And it's, you know, Clay, can you handle this? You know, and then, of course, when the actual singing kicks in, I think it's, you know, clearly a studio backup group. Because otherwise, if it's not, then Clay Matthews has a damn good singing voice. But, like, they were legitimately funny in that. And it's, you know, it was the perfect crossover between sports and music. The one thing I was super disappointed about is apparently they got the role just because Clay Matthews and a couple of the other players, TJ Lang, talked about how much they loved the first Pitch Perfect. And I was like, if that's the case, then basketball Twitter should have had an a cappella group in this.
Where's Zach Harper?
We talk about it all the time.
Yeah, we all love the karaoke, dude.
Yeah.
Like I've seen Jacoby do some Britney Spears.
Mm-hmm. Like let's be honest. While DSM did a decent job with This Is How We Do It, basketball Twitter would have killed it.
Oh.
Like, there is no song more ready-made for basketball Twitter to perform a cappella than This Is How We Do It by Montel Jordan.
Yes. Yes. Exactly.
So, producers of Pitch Perfect 3, I know you're listening because you clearly listened to this podcast. I know on GMA you announced this morning that there's a walk-on role available, and we want to let a random fan still have that role. But I think there's room for me and Adam and Ray Ray and Zach Harper and Robbie Calland and a bunch of the other guys on Twitter that love Pitch Perfect to show up in Pitch Perfect 3 and, let's be honest, work our oral magic.
We got this. We totally got this.
In fact, just call it oral magic. That can't possibly be taken.
We're totally cool
else.
With that being the name of our a cappella group.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. How do we spell it so we can put it out on Twitter?
A U R A L.
R A L. Okay.
And to hammer it home, we'll all show up in throwback Tracy McGrady and Penny Hardaway Orlando Magic jerseys.
Oh, yeah.
It's over. It is over.
So, let's just make this happen. Producers of Pitch Perfect 3, Anna Kendrick. Because I know Anna Kendrick listens to this podcast.
Oh,
so,
yeah, obviously.
Obviously, yeah.
Anna, just call me up. You have my number. We'll make this happen.
Hey, we want to include Russell Westbrook in the group, too.
Yeah, we'll get Russ in there.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
We'll figure it out.
So, Pitch Perfect 3, oral magic. We're down for that. Oh, man. I'd do it.
That would be the greatest.
It'd be so
it would be the greatest. We look like college kids.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah. I spend time on a college campus like right now, and I'm like, wow, this is exclusively balding bearded men. Exclusively.
I haven't seen Rising to do karaoke before though. Like honestly.
Oh,
I
tweeted out a video of me doing Timber a few months ago.
How did I miss that?
I don't know.
Like,
I'll track it down.
Is it on YouTube?
No, it was just on Twitter.
We talked about, like, we could possibly do an entire podcast out of this, but Carl Lewis had a music career.
Oh, no.
Yeah, he did.
No. No. Hang on. Does one horrible... Oh, no, he did songs. You're right.
Yes, he did songs. Yeah,
he did songs.
Like, everyone knows the National Anthem performance, mm-hmm. which is quite possibly the greatest SportsCenter clip in history. Charlie Steiner just absolutely losing it.
Francis Scott off-key? Oh,
yeah. Francis Scott off-key. But Carl Lewis released actual songs that were released by an actual record label.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, oh, God, like, His NBA career was better. Let's put it that way.
there's a prominent NBA video on YouTube. And there's a video on YouTube I see all the time whenever I search Carl Lewis music. It's that song Break It Up, and he's working out in the gym.
I remember that.
The most. Yeah.
It's the most 80s thing that exists.
Uh-huh. Really, it does, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not a bad singer, but, oh my goodness, the songs.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, it's as 80s as you can get. I mean, again, we could spend all this time on this podcast talking about Carl Lewis, his music career, his acting career, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
See his devil acting real or whatever.
What is striking about Carl Lewis is, and I get that he's an artifact of the times. Like you said, it's so 80s. But mm-hmm. today, it seems almost engineered to make everybody else as uncomfortable as possible.
Yeah.
You can't enjoy yourself in the Carl Lewis experience. You're like, oh, God. Oh, no.
And
is he doing this on purpose?
It's so weird because, like, he was legitimately one of the most dominant athletes of all time.
Yes.
Full stop. Yes.
Like, watching him compete was mesmerizing. Watching him do literally anything else was impressive. Carl, why are you trying to sing? Carl, why are you so bad in this cameo? You're playing yourself.
Are you looking at the camera? In his demo acting room, he was like literally shouting like the exact same phrase or whatever, or he was copying whatever the other actor was saying. It was hilarious.
I think it's important to note that he was in a Hilary Duff movie.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Go on.
He played a People magazine reporter in the Hilary Duff, Haley Duff vehicle, Material Girls.
We need to track this clip down immediately.
I feel like we ought to live tweet this instead of football tonight.
I mean, first of all, if you haven't seen this movie, it's peak Hilary Duff, like, trying to do something other than Lizzie McGuire and failing horribly. Mm-hmm. And then she brings her sister along for the ride, who wasn't, I mean, as sad as Hilary Duff's acting is, Haley Duff was not nearly the actress that Hilary Duff was. but then they suck in these, like, actual talented people, and you just feel so sad for them.
It's always sort of a jarring experience when you discover new levels of this isn't very good, such as, like, well, I think we'd better put Hilary back on the screen now. That's enough from Haley Duff.
Yeah.
We shouldn't do this.
Yeah, I just remember Haley Duff having a bit part in Napoleon Dynamite, and that was it. And she didn't really say much in that movie.
Oh,
so.
Yeah.
She was on, like, two seasons of Seventh Heaven.
Mm-hmm.
But she has, like, if you go to IMDb and look, she has this, like, extensive movie career of playing essentially, like, super tiny parts.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. But this one movie she did with Hillary, it's so bad, and not even in, like, the enjoyable bad way.
Tragically, the clip in question is not on YouTube.
Ah.
I just looked. Not there.
But I do have Carl Lewis Break It Up, like, ready to go over here.
I mean, that's too bad.
as soon as I get this ad out of the way, then I'm going to just play it out really loud just so we can close the show. So who was really the best, besides Wayman Tisdale, who was the best pro athlete musician? I don't even know how to go about this. Shaq, I guess?
I'm going to go off the board with someone we didn't actually mention. Steven Jackson. Steven Jackson, the basketball player.
Oh,
Captain Jack, Shaq Jack, has released Shaq some really solid mixtapes. The weird thing is, like, I don't know how you can really classify him as an athlete musician, because all of his musical stuff essentially came after his NBA career. Like, he shifted careers, but his stuff's pretty solid, and Damian Lillard has a chance to get there. His stuff that he releases on SoundCloud and Instagram has potential. The reality is, though, that he's gonna fall into the same thing Shaq did, where he has to spend so much time working on basketball that he doesn't necessarily get to hone his craft as well as he could in rapping.
I think that there is one more person that we haven't considered that probably blows the rest of the field out of the water here, and that's Aaron Carter.
He did beat Shaq.
Exactly. So one, his athletic bona fides are unimpeachable. He beat Shaq.
And he even made a song about it too.
Exactly. He beat him so bad, he rapped it like he, rap might not be the right word, but it's not entirely the wrong word either, because it certainly wasn't what you or I would call singing. So I feel like that's sort of a 1-2 punch that basically nobody else can compare to. It's not like Shaq ever had a song called "I Beat Wilt," because that never happened.
If Ben Wallace had released a song that said "I Beat Shaq," that would have been a different story. But he didn't.
My God, how did we not get a rap album out of him?
How did we not get a rap album out of Sheed?
No one would touch it. Like, I'm sure they'd be like, this is a little too hard for me. Whatever, Dr. Dre.
She needs to drop an album called Ball Don't Lie.
Yes.
Like, this needs to happen tomorrow.
Yes. Right now. Sheed, if you're ever listening to this podcast, never. But you need to drop an album right now.
If that means creating his own label called Play Hard, then, like, do it.
Well, he's rich enough. He can make his own label.
Why wouldn't he?
Yeah, exactly. So do it.
Sheed, listen to us right now.
Do it.
Sheed! If you say Sheed loud enough, he hears you, no matter where you are in the world.
Does he have Twitter? He doesn't have Twitter, though, huh?
Also a shame.
I feel like that's sort of in line with him, though. Because like, Twitter would require him to spend a lot of time at a computer or phone.
Yes.
Whereas he can hear anybody in the world already if they say, Sheed! So what's the use of Twitter?
Right. Well, because we need to be able to hear Sheed.
Yeah.
We need his thoughts on balls not lying and teams playing hard.
Exactly. Wow.
Like, so, honestly, Sheed could have solved Deflategate in, like, 2 seconds. He sees the balls, ball don't lie, end of story.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. Yeah. So, Goodell's got to call him. Tell you what, if Goodell calls up Sheed, that's all he's got to do. I'm back.
Yeah, Sheed should be the new NFL commissioner.
Yeah.
I'm back. Exactly. As soon as that happens.
Yeah. Adam Reisinger, tell us where we can find your work, your social media, all that stuff.
You can find my work on ESPN.com, mostly in the Now column on the front page. Occasionally I'll put something together and I'll tweet that out at Adam Reisinger.
Mm-hmm. Spell it
R-E-I-S-I-N-G-E-R.
Yes, sir. And my sometimes co-host Adam Jacoby, where we can find your stuff.
You can find my stuff at blackheartgoldpants.com. With football season going on, and I'm sure that 80-90% of your listenership is Iowa season ticket holders. We're all up in the Eastern Iowa area, so I'm really in my zone here when I plug BHGP, and I'm also on the Twitter.com at Adam. _ and the underscore is very important.
Yes,
Adam _ Jacoby, JACOBI. If you don't put in the underscore, what you get is I'm not kidding, a forensics teacher in Wisconsin who has a very different sense of humor than I do, which is to say, he doesn't find me funny.
He's constantly telling people to tweet at me instead of him, and he blocked me years ago. So for this poor alternate universe Adam Jacoby's sake, do include the underscore.
So
do it for him.
So what you're saying is that he doesn't appreciate your multi-tweet stories?
No, and in fact, it might make him not want to be on Twitter anymore. It wouldn't surprise me.
Well, it looks like he has not tweeted since September 7th, which is 3 days ago, but his last tweet before that was March 18th.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I can see why he would want to stay away from Twitter.
And my guess is one of his last 10 tweets was, "Are you sure you didn't mean Adam underscore Jacoby?" So I'm sorry, alternate universe Adam. I didn't ask for this.
Literally, 1, 2, 3, 4 of his last 5 tweets are, "I think you intended this for Adam underscore Jacoby."
You see what happens when people are sloppy and they don't include the underscore? Yeah. They run clearly a brilliant man off of Twitter, and we don't want that. We don't want that.
I believe you intended this for Adam underscore Jacoby. I believe you have the wrong Adam underscore Jacoby.
Mm-hmm.
I think you tagged the wrong Adam underscore Jacoby.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so sorry, dude. I didn't want you to do this or to have to do this. I'm sorry, other Adam Jacoby, but you have a very good name.
So, we are done here. Maybe we'll make our own album soon.
Yes.
You know. Yeah.
It'll be all wrapped Britney Spears covers.
Yes.
Show me how you want it to be. Rip rappity doo.
Thanks for wasting my time, Adams.
Always a pleasure.
Hey, everyone. I'm Matt Moore from CBSSports.com. Listen to Ray Ray's Fundamental as much as you can, as often as you can, because it's awesome, he's awesome, the NBA is awesome, and you are awesome. Have a great day.
Thank you so much to both Adams, Jacoby, and Reisinger for doing this podcast. You heard their Twitter handles, and you'll hear mine in a bit as I gotta do this bit. For this podcast, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You can also download the show at RareRay.net and on Stitcher. And this show is also being syndicated by the Happy Hour Network. Follow me on Twitter at TheNoLookPass and follow the podcast on Twitter at RareRayIsFun. I want to say a few things really quick. The main podcast was recorded on September the 10th, but it is now September 11th. And I want to say that we will never forget 9/11. We will always remember the people that we lost during those attacks. So please, tell your loved ones that you love them. And speaking of loved ones, it's unfortunate that 9/11 happens to be the birthdays of both my dad and my brother. So, happy birthday, Dad. Happy birthday, Roger. That's all I got. Just remember that Ray Ray is fundamental, and you don't need a library card to check me out. Until the next episode, party people.
Great, but like, I've seen Jacoby do Britney Spears.
Love Me Some
Yeah,
Britney.
No, I did 3 songs that night. I did 2 Taylor Swifts, including We Are Never Getting Back Together, and,
uh-huh.
and I did Timber. Had Katie Daly, one of my coworkers, do the Kesha parts, and I did the Pitbull.
Excellent.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. I was lucky enough to do a check it off with Ledlow when we were all down in Atlanta.
Right.
She is better at this than I am, which will shock you that she might actually be talented at something.
Oh,
No,
I was being facetious because she's talented at everything.
She's amazing.
Yeah,
she's the best.
She is great.
Okay.
She's great.
Let's just make sure that I wasn't, like, nobody thinks that I was throwing any shade at her. Game over, yeah!
Molded.